right, welcome to the Young Turks, guys. Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparyan with you guys. It's a lovely Thursday evening-ish across the country.
I'm so excited about the show today.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Huh, I like your excitement. Why? What's going on?
Look, we're bad people. Because maybe it's not right to talk about Lawrence O'Donnell having a meltdown on one night during the filming of his show. But it's just so good to watch. And, you know, no judgment, no hate, no nothing. I just want to talk about it.
We're just going to watch it. There's no judgment. Okay, yeah. Hashtag no judgment. Okay, so that's a little bit later in the program. Also, in the second hour, the Missouri protests, the St. Louis protests. You know, I can't wait to jump in on it, and I think that it's taking a very interesting turn.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to let you guys know that one of the people leading the protest is a Just Democrat. So it's kind of an interesting angle on that I want to discuss. But I haven't been on the show in a couple of days, so I'm raring to go on every one of these topics. So,
nice.
So let's have at it, Hoss.
All right, let's do it. Let's also turn on the monitor because I need it for graphics. Just get that out of the way.
Okay.
All right. The healthcare debate among senators rages on, and of course, Republicans are trying to rush a vote for a replacement plan for the Affordable Care Act before the procedural instructions run out of time, and all of a sudden they will have to do more than just get a simple majority in the Senate in order to pass this replacement proposal. Now, Mike Pence has chimed in on this debate, and recently he was on Fox and Friends talking about some of the potential flaws in the proposal and what they might do to fix it. Take a look.
What do you say when governors say, like Governor Christie, I'm getting $4 billion less, I'm not for this?
Well, it's absolutely true to say the Graham-Cassidy bill, over time, levels out on a per-person basis the way we distribute money on healthcare, which I think resonates with most Americans, mm-hmm. that we will ultimately get to a place where the resources that are available to states are based on a per-individual basis. And we'll get to that. But there is time in the days ahead and in future budgets to address those issues as they arrive.
Okay, so I just want to clarify something. And it's something that we talked about on the show yesterday. But just to reiterate, there were some states, or there are some states under the Affordable Care Act that receive more money than other states. And this is, of course, federal money in order to help subsidize health insurance. Now, the reason why some states received much more money is because they agreed to play ball with the Affordable Care Act, meaning they agreed to expand Medicare in their states. There are other states, red states in particular, who did not care about the best interests of their constituents, refused to take that money because they refused to take advantage of the positive components of the Affordable Care Act. And so I just want to make that clear, because Republicans are spinning that and making it seem as though, oh, the liberal states are getting all this money while the red states are getting screwed over by the Affordable Care Act. That was the decision by the lawmakers in those states.
Yeah, they could have gotten the money as well. All they had to do was ask for it, and it was so that their voters, their constituents, could actually have better health care. They said, no, we don't want our citizens to have better health care. So even though it's money we can take, we're not going to take it, and we're going to deny our own citizens. So that was their decision. Now, on this Pence video, I'm greatly amused by one thing he said. Now, so first he said, look, this levels out on a per person basis. Okay, in other words, yes, we're cutting the funds. Okay, it's a funny, politically correct way to say we're cutting funding. But the amusing part was he followed that up by saying, I think this really resonates with the American people. Which, the leveling out per person, nobody knows what that means. What do you mean that it resonates with the American people? It doesn't resonate with anybody. You're just saying, yeah, oh man, people are gonna love it when we cut their healthcare. Well, if you say so, big guy.
Let me jump in on that, because keep in mind that they tried to do this without getting any attention, right? They wanted to jam it through a vote. They didn't want Americans to have an opportunity to reflect on it or analyze it. They don't even want the Congressional Budget Office to have the time to analyze it and see whether or not people are going to lose health insurance coverage through this proposal, which, by the way, they will, which is why they're trying to rush it through a vote. So they don't care or even consider how Americans feel about it. They don't even want to give them an opportunity to think about it.
Are you kidding me? If it was popular, they'd be parading it up and down the street. They'd take their time. They'd Say, look at what the CBO score is. We're so proud of it. They do all those things. They're not trying to do any of that. They're trying to sneak it in because they know it's not popular. A similar version of this bill when it was introduced earlier, you know what popularity it had in America? 17%. That is disastrously low. You know what that's going to lead to? A leveling out per politician on the Republican side. In other words, your ratings are going to go way down and you know it. So lying about how it resonates with the American people is hilarious.
Yes. All right. So there's another portion of that interview that Pence had with Fox and Friends that I loved. Senators have been dodging the question in regard to whether or not people will get coverage if they have a pre-existing condition. Pence is no exception when it comes to the dodging. Take a look.
Folks like Jimmy Kimmel, they're worried about the pre-existing condition thing because right. This will be up to the governors to decide how the money's dispersed, who gets coverage. Every state will determine what's best for their folks. But with that, can you guarantee that these governors will make sure pre-existing conditions are covered?
Thomas Jefferson said, government that governs least governs best. I mean, the question that people ought to ask is, who do you think will be more responsive to the health care needs in your community? Your governor and your state legislature, or a congressman and a president in a far-off nation's capital?
Yeah, no one asked you a philosophical question about the role of government. We just want to know whether or not people with pre-existing conditions will get coverage.
Now, let's be just absolutely clear. You guys heard that for yourself. That means no, you will not be covered if you have a pre-existing condition. Because she asked a very clear question, to her credit, on Fox and Friends. Okay. And he did not answer the question. Instead, he said, well, we're going to leave it up to the states because that's what Thomas Jefferson would want. In other words, yes, your state can allow for insurance that takes away protections for people with pre-existing conditions. So that is absolutely clear. That actually proves Jimmy Kimmel's point that the Louisiana senator was in fact lying. This does not cover pre-existing conditions. Donald Trump, when he says it does, of course, is telling his billionth lie in a row. And you could tell because the vice president just told in a point blank question, is pre-existing conditions guaranteed to be covered? And he said, no, it's going to be up to the states like Jefferson would want. There it is.
Right. So, look, it's clear that they are not doing anything that's going to benefit us. There's a reason why they don't want the public to reflect on it and analyze it. There's a reason why they don't want to give the CBO an opportunity to do it. There's a reason why they're rushing this so they can pass it with a simple majority rather than having a larger portion of the Senate agree on it. And it's just pathetic. And the reason why this story is getting attention is because people are more aware of what's going on in politics today, and because people like Jimmy Kimmel continue to harp on this issue with good reason. Okay,
so finally, I'm amused by the idea of Republicans quoting giant progressives in history whenever they think it suits their purpose. Oh, Martin Luther King. I mean, he would have been a Republican. Sure, buddy. Of course. Look at the actual history of Martin Luther King. And by the way, what he actually said about Republicans. Even though at that time they were just beginning to switch over to being the far right insane party that they wound up developing. He could see that ahead of time. And Jefferson was a radical liberal. He was so radical, he did a revolution against the establishment. You think Jefferson would have been like, oh, draconian plans where that screws over the American people? I kind of love it. Not sure you got the right guy there, buddy.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to Jimmy Kimmel. Late night talk show host Jimmy Kimmel has been incredibly critical of Republicans in the Senate and how they're trying to jam or rush a vote on a replacement plan for the Affordable Care Act. Now, recently, he criticized Senator Bill Cassidy because Bill Cassidy promised him that if he ever co-authored, co-sponsored, or supported any type of legislation replacing Obamacare, it would pass the so-called Jimmy Kimmel test, indicating that everyone would be covered regardless of whether or not they have a pre-existing condition. Well, Jimmy Kimmel realized that because of a lack of cost controls, people with pre-existing conditions under the Republican plan would get charged exorbitant premiums and wouldn't be able to afford their health care. So he criticizes Cassidy. Cassidy hits back at him with this statement. Video A16. Okay, so Cassidy basically criticized him and said that, you know, I'm sorry that Kimmel doesn't understand the bill. Well, Kimmel wasn't going to let that stand. So he just recently did another monologue where he hit back at Cassidy and said the following. Graphic 3A, please. Oh, I get it. I don't understand because I'm a talk show host, right? Well, then, help me out. Which part don't I understand? Is it the part where you cut $243 billion from federal healthcare assistance? Am I not understanding the part where states would be allowed to let insurance companies price you out of coverage for having pre-existing conditions? Which part of that am I not understanding? Or could it be, Senator Cassidy, that the problem is that I do understand and that you got caught with your GO penis out? Is that possible?
Damn.
Because it feels like it is. Man, is Jimmy Kimmel the new woke bae? That was amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, Kimmel's getting a ton of credit for pointing out things that are obvious. And let me join in that credit. Thank God he did, because we have this weird media and political atmosphere in America where you need a comedian to say something for people to pay attention to it. And it's partly because the Democratic Party is not very good at their jobs. They should have been screaming from the hilltops about this. It's also partly because the mainstream media is terrible at their job. Because why are you leaving it to a comedian to say the truth? Mm-hmm. So why can't CNN say it doesn't cover pre-existing conditions? It doesn't. It doesn't. Why don't they say, hey, you know what? And I know they'll never ever want to do this because, oh my God, then people in power might be upset with them. But to say what Kimmel said, no, that senator is lying. President Trump is lying. All the Republicans who claim that it covers pre-existing condition, that is not true. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. Whether you think it should cover pre-existing conditions or not is an opinion. Does it cover it? That's a fact. So that's why Kimmel stands out, because the rest of the media is so bad at their job. So
right.
That's why people are like, oh my God, somebody actually said the truth. That's crazy. Is he allowed to say that on TV?
Well, I think what Kimmel does, and I think it's important, is he makes something that could be considered complex, like a policy idea that could be considered complex, accessible to people who aren't necessarily in politics. Like, it seems obvious to us because we live it, we breathe it, it's every day for us. But for a lot of people, especially people who watch those late night shows or, you know, are more into like the entertainment world, maybe they were never aware of these things, and having Kimmel kind of break it down the way he does is great. I love that he's doing it. Now, Kimmel was also recently attacked by Brian Kilmeade. Brian Kilmeade made a point on his show about how, oh, the Emmys had such terrible ratings because of the fact that it was highly politicized. Apparently, Kimmel hasn't learned anything from that. Well, Kimmel hit back at Brian Kilmeade as well. Let's take a look at the first video.
All right, Sunday's politically charged Emmys may have been the lowest rated in history, but that's not stopping Hollywood elites like comedian Jimmy Kimmel for pushing their politics on the rest of the country. Watch. Is he actually portraying the Graham Cassidy bill properly last night on his late night show? Joining us now is Senator Lindsey Graham, one of the co-sponsors of that bill. Senator, he went off on you and Senator Cassidy directly. Yeah.
Okay, so that basically led to Kimmel doing this. Take a look.
And Jimmy Kimmel did not like that introduction to the Graham segment and decides to take a personal attack on me.
And the reason I found this comment to be particularly annoying is because this is a guy, Brian Kilmeade, who whenever I see him, kisses my ass like a little boy meeting Batman. Oh, he's such a fan, follows me on Twitter. He asked me to write a blurb for his book, which I did. He calls my agent looking for projects. He's dying to be a member of the Hollywood elite. The only reason he's not a member of the Hollywood elite is because nobody will hire him to be one. And you know, the reason I'm talking about this is because my son had an open heart surgery and has to have two more. And because of that, I learned that there are kids with no insurance in the same situation. I don't get anything out of this, Brian, you phony little creep. Oh, I'll pound you when I see you. That will be my blurb for your next book. Brian Kilmeade is a phony little creep.
Wow.
Man, I give Kilmeade credit for running it on his own show. I'm not, man, that. You're hurt, dog. I don't know if you know that, but you don't ask him if he's all right.
Oh, and he makes it very clear that he's hurt, right? So he, yes, okay, sure, give him credit for airing that entire rant by Kimmel. But I think what actually makes Kilmeade look worse was his response to that on his own show. So I want to get right to it. Take a look. He says,
for him to go out and attack me personally and try to get into my personality and wants to be a Hollywood celebrity, I was out there for a while. I was doing sports, came back here to, and after doing sports for 20 years, was been at Fox. Why would I ever leave the number one network in all of cable, not only news, and the number one morning show in the country through all these consequential events to go out to in Los Angeles and do entertainment? I mean, what point is that? No one will hire him. It's not even based in fact.
Okay, so he is saying he does not want to be part of the Hollywood elite. Yes, he has reached out to Jimmy Kimmel, told him he's a fan, asked him to write the blurb in the book. He confessed to all of that stuff, but does not want to be part of the Hollywood elite, not interested at all. But one thing that he wants to definitely clear up is that he's not little. He explains.
For him to go that crazy and attack me personally. So when I get up in the morning, all of a sudden, instead of just saying, Brian Kilmeade asked this question, he's terrible at his job, you have to attack me personally. And I guess this little, you said this little man or something like that. I'm 5'10", 174. I'm sorry that's not good enough for you. But I just think if you look at the average chart of a male in America, I think I'm pretty much on target. And I don't kiss your butt. I think you're good at your job. So if I say nice things, I'm not kissing up to you. So you're in the political fray now, and we'll see what happens from here.
Oof. Aww. You know what? I got to be honest. I almost feel bad for him.
Yeah. No. Because No, I don't feel bad for him. Like, just kidding.
That didn't last long. That was about half a second.
No. Yeah, I don't feel bad. Because everything that he has said that has been so incredibly deplorable just rushed back into my brain. And I have no love for Kilmeade. However, I think that last clip that we just showed you guys perfectly illustrates a point that I've been trying to make, but I don't think I've articulated well. Look, people like Kilmeade, people like some of the guys on the alt-right, their egos are bruised, right? They don't feel good about themselves. They don't feel confident. And they're like they have all this pent up tension. And I mean, like if someone called me, Ann Coulter, for instance, during our debate called me an old Soviet woman, right? I know I'm not old. So when she said it, I just like rolled off my back, did not care at all. And I moved on to whatever answer I was giving to the debate question. But I'm not insecure about my age. And so someone calling me old doesn't bother me in the least bit. But with Kilmeade, he heard the word little and he panicked, right? He's like, oh my God, I have to now defend my size, which is ridiculous. Like, why would you even get into that? We're having a debate about healthcare. So anyway, that stood out to me.
Okay, so yeah, and Brian, when he calls you a phony little creep, he's not talking about any part of your body. That's not the point he's trying to make. So you don't have to get into stats about your weight and size and stuff. Anyway, so look, I think Kimmel hit him pretty damn hard with that he's kissing my ass and stuff. And you can tell from Kilmeade's reaction that it's largely true. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't like, no, I never complimented. No, I didn't ask for him to sign my book. He did, it's obvious. Not sign, but do the book blurb. Mm-hmm. You could sense in that. That's why as a lib, I'm not as harsh as Anna on this one. I still feel bad for the guy because, I mean, Kimmel took a blowtorch to this dude's knee. And he's like hopping around like, that hurt.
But Jake, what is the criticism that we have for Democrats or liberals? The constant criticism.
They're too weak.
They're too weak, right? So Republicans will punch you in the face. And you know, Democrats will sit around or liberals will sit around and have a discussion about whether or not it's okay to do any type of microaggression. Not microaggression, big aggression, macroaggression, okay? Go after these bad guys, and I'm not talking about physically, okay? I'm talking about going after their ideas in an aggressive manner and not letting up. I think that we give up too easily. And when I say we, I don't mean us specifically, but as an ideology, we will kneel as like the second we're asked to kneel, and it drives me crazy.
Yeah, and that's of course the old Democratic Party, which we can't stand on the show. So look, one last thing that's pro Kilmeade is that he did say, let's be fair, he did say at the end, he said about Kimmel, continue to do a great job and best of luck with your son. That's nice.
That was kind of classy. Sure.
Okay, it was classy. Okay, now Back to the essence of the story, which is, look, all this stuff is fun, but the bottom line is who's right. And so Kilmeade's thesis on that is, he said, you know, if you're gonna talk about this stuff, he said, quote, you should know what you're doing, talk to the people that wrote it. And he says, like we do, like they had Lindsey Graham on. No, but that's not the correct way to find out what's in the bill. You're asking a partisan who wrote the bill, and Kimmel's right, the politicians come on your air and lie to you all the time. So I was kidding around on Twitter. I didn't mean it like I'm not going after Kimmel or anything. I was just being a little snarky, saying, you know, oh, do they, the politicians lie? Of course, like this is not a breaking news event. But to the media, it is. That's why they're like, oh my God, somebody said the politicians lie. Wow, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, bless his heart for saying that. And so to Kilmeade, you're wrong. Just having that politician come on and to lie to you and your audience is not at all helpful. In fact, Jimmy Kimmel did have the guy on. He had Cassidy out in the first place. That's how this whole thing got started. And Cassidy lied to his face.
That's right.
And that's why Kimmel went on the rant that he did. And so he's not as familiar with politics, so that he was kind of personally outraged that this guy told me a lie. I can't quite believe that, right? So, and the facts are on Jimmy Kimmel's side. They are cutting healthcare by $243 billion. He didn't even get into this, but by the way, the real reason they're doing it is because they have an even bigger tax cut for the rich inside this bill, mm-hmm. which they never talk about. That's the real purpose of this bill. And yes, it does not cover pre-existing conditions. And finally, look, the facts are on his side. And finally, part of the reason that it's working and people are on Kimmel's side is because covering pre-existing conditions is incredibly popular. It's popular throughout the whole country, and it's even popular among Republicans. So when he does the job of the press, what they should be doing, and calling Cassidy the liar that he actually is, and Trump then tweeted, I would not sign Graham Cassidy if it did not include coverage of pre-existing conditions. It does! A great bill, repeal and replace. That's just not true. Yeah. It's another lie. It's a definitive lie. So not only is Kimmel right that they're lying, but he's also right that it's a very popular provision in the country. That's why they're having to lie about it. And it's great that even though he doesn't need it because he's wealthy and could have taken care of his son, it made him empathize with people. He's like, are you kidding me? If you don't have insurance, what the kids, their kids are gonna die? Isn't that terrible? And yes, most Americans think it's terrible. Fox and Friends doesn't. Lindsey Graham doesn't. Cassidy doesn't. Trump doesn't. Well, then somebody's got to tell people that that's the case. Thank God at least Jimmy Kimmel did it.
Yep. All right, we got to take our first break. Let's do that. And when we come back, white supremacists admit to using the terrorist playbook in order to gain political popularity. That story is explosive. You don't want to miss it. And then later on in the show, my personal fave, Lawrence O'Donnell losing it.
Oh, no. Back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. I got a bunch of great messages here. First one's from Ben Peck on YouTube Super Chat. He makes a really good point. He said, important point, if GOP allows insurance to be sold across state lines, after a plan like this is passed, most plans will be sold from states that waive requirements for pre-existing conditions, etc. So that's a double whammy. Mm. You allow the states to end the pre-existing condition coverage. And then the thing that the Republicans love is, oh, sell insurance across state lines. It sounds really good. Like, why not? Why not? We should all be able to. What that does is creates a race to the bottom. And so it allows the worst insurance or the one that covers the least to be sold everywhere. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that's likely what's going to happen. Great point, Ben. Joseph S. tweets in, Cenk the Turk Uyghur is back in the house. TYT, TYT, TYT. Thank you, Joseph. Appreciate it. It's very nice. I would have screamed that, but it's about me, so that's the way you wrote it, so it would have been a little much. hello, it's me, says, I just voted for the Young Turks for Streamies Show of the Year. Why, thank you. Hashtag TYT for Streamies, four as an F-O-R, write it out. All you need is that hashtag. You could vote once a day, even a retweet counts. So hashtag TYT for Streamies, that would be awesome if we won Show of the Year. That means the best show on the internet. That's pretty freaking cool. We've been nominated 2 years in a row. Let's win this time, okay? Jess says, Mike Pence, if by saying resonates with all Americans, you mean kills many Americans, you'd be correct, sir. Jordan Hobson says, that's my stupid Senator Bill Cassidy. I'm ashamed, I'm disgusted. Nambia says, I love how, Nambia, that's funny. I love how the GOP went after Kimmel for being a celebrity with an opinion when their president was a celebrity with an opinion.
Yes.
Sorry, t-shirt for Nambia. Okay,
that's
an excellent point. ShopTYT.com to check out Young Turks merchandise. Anyway, Old Turk says, if this bill dies, Jimmy Kimmel will have saved lives. Bless his heart. Remember the last guy who did this much, made this much of a difference on a bill was actually Jon Stewart. Mm-hmm. When they were, the Republicans were refusing to give money to first responders that responded to 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And he, they're
so
the worst, they're unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Stewart shamed them enough that they flipped. Mm-hmm. And they actually gave the money. Control Left says, it terrifies me that 200 years from now, a US politician might invoke a Trump quote as if it were wise. That's funny. G. LaCroix says, petition to have Cenk Uygur interview Jimmy Kimmel on TYT Live. Go for it. I don't know how you do that petition, but God bless, have at it, Hoss. Last time you guys did one, it was for Bernie Sanders. 17,000 people signed it in 24 hours, and he was on the show within 48 hours.
How did I not know about that petition?
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
And it had nothing to do with us, you guys did it. Anyway, and finally, Derek Martin says, Kilmeade stood through the entire radio podcast to prove that he's a big boy.
That is such a good point.
I thought about that too, but thank you. I forgot to mention it. What's with the right wingers and their Napoleon complexes, he asks.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it is funny. All right, Casper, what's next?
All right. A local paper in Kentucky recently spoke to a white supremacist who's pushing for a new political party referred to the traditionalist worker party. Now, the head of that party is Matthew Heimbach, and he is claiming that, you know, in order to appeal to Americans who might be turned off by white supremacy, maybe we need to take a page out of the book of terrorists and appeal to them in other ways and just kind of hook them through our economic plans or economic ideas. So let me give you the details on what he wants to do. He wants to go to areas where people have less economic opportunities, who might be living in poverty, and push for health clinics, food banks, small businesses. These are all great things. And then once you provide these great things that help pull them out of poverty, well, then you get their support, and the white supremacy just kind of comes with the package. So let me give you his exact quotes. Matthew Heimbach is the leader of the white nationalist traditionalist worker party, and he tells the Herald Leader that he is explicitly modeling his community outreach plans on the ones successfully used in the past by terrorist organizations to win over populations that might otherwise be wary of extremist groups. So the traditionalist worker party is a white rights advocacy group that is anti-capitalist, anti-Semitic, and anti-diversity. The group's ultimate goal is the creation of an all white ethno state that people of other races would need a visa to visit. Okay.
Man, they are interesting amalgamation there of like, hey, white people, pride in that, power, yes, right wing, but anti-capitalist. Look, yeah. So here's the thing. I said on the show about a billion times, I'm a capitalist, and so I believe in a mixed economy, the one kind that we have here and the kind that we have in Europe. We can debate over what the government should do and what private industry should do, but they should both exist. Okay, but it is funny, so I disagree with every part of his platform.
Mm-hmm.
The anti-capitalist side, the anti-Semitic side, and all white ethno state, etc. But there is an interesting lesson in there. It is that the super right wing, I mean, again, I'm not trying to lump him in with regular Republicans. I'm just saying that you're the extreme of that end of the spectrum is also frustrated with capitalism.
Yeah, of course.
That they're suffering so much that this guy's like, I don't know, let's try the Hamas and Hezbollah thing and IRA too, as he's about
yeah.
to tell you. Of like maybe doing something for people. And they're both the extreme right, certainly the extreme left, but also it's an indication of the voters of the right and the voters of the left are onto the fundamental problem, which is that the establishment is not really on your side. And it is true that they have rigged the rules against you. That doesn't mean you should do an all-white ethno state or take this guy's assistance.
Right. Look, I think that his strategy could be successful. And, you know, we just finished a terrible election And the outcome was the one candidate who pretended to care about the economic opportunities of Americans,
yes.
Right? Whereas the other candidate, you know, had a hard time even pretending. So let's hear from Heimbach. He tells the press that Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Irish Republican Movement, those are the type of terrorist organizations that he is modeling his strategy after, which is incredible. Because also keep in mind that he's a white nationalist. He thinks we need to keep everyone else out. This needs to be an ethnically white country, and that's it. Because, you know, the others are terrible. I mean, I like to model myself after the others, especially those terrorist organizations, because they get it. They get it right. But I don't want them in the country.
Yeah. I mean, it is really, really weird. I don't want any black or brown people. But Hezbollah, on the other hand, they're pretty bright.
It's
what
insane.
A strange, strange thing. But you know, if you're deeply anti-Semitic, as he obviously is, maybe in some way he feels like, oh, they're anti-Semitic, I'm anti-Semitic, let's make a deal. I don't know, man. But this, in some ways, the state of our economy, not in the numbers of the unemployed, but in how low wages are, mm-hmm. have driven people sometimes literally crazy. And so this guy might have been crazy from the get-go, but the fact that he has any kind of traction today is an indication that things are not right in the country.
Absolutely. He says, when the system is unable or unwilling to fulfill the needs of the community, the nationalists step up. Future campaigns will emphasize securing a future for our children, advocating for the silent majority, or taking care of those left behind by globalism. Now, he does not plan to emphasize anything regarding white nationalism. He wants to emphasize the messaging regarding the economy and economic opportunities for these people. And again, that's the way that you appeal to them, because everyone wants the same thing. Everyone wants to live a prosperous life, provide for their families, and not have to struggle or worry about providing. And so if he can appeal to that, I think that he actually has a pretty, like a significantly well thought out strategy. And the thing that concerns me is that since his numbers or his following is so small at the moment, there are people who are keeping an eye on extremists like this who are just kind of like brushing him off and saying, no, this isn't gonna work. People are smart enough to know, you know, what he's really about, and they will reject him. I mean, look at who we just elected. We elected Trump because, again, he was the only candidate, you know, in the general election after the primaries who pretended to care about the economic opportunities of Americans.
Yeah, that's, look, he probably won't have enough money to be able to pull this off, but if he actually set up a health clinic and a food bank, you think poor people are gonna go, no, no, I don't want your food because I don't agree with your ideology? Some will, and bless their hearts. But if they're hungry, they'll probably take the food. If their kid is sick and he's got a clinic and it actually works, which would be shocking given how stupid he is, but if it worked, people would take it. That's my guess. I mean, look, I don't want this guy to have any oxygen at all. So that goes to the great irony here. Remember, it's the right wing who said, we don't need government. Now he's saying, well, since the government isn't taking care of us, us white nationalists have to set up things that the government would normally do. Take care of healthcare, take care of, you know, food for the hungry and small business funds. That should be part of the core mission of the government. And here's a super right winger going, why isn't the government here? Why isn't the government helping us? Okay, then I'm gonna do it. And that is an amazing testament to what's going on in the country.
Absolutely. I mean, look,
to their failed ideology.
Think about how, you know, this is an extreme example, but I think it also kind of speaks to this topic. Think about how ISIS successfully recruits people who, you know, didn't have terrorist tendencies. They do it because, or they successfully do it because these are people who have been disenfranchised, who have a lack of opportunity. It's, you know, people who do feel hostility toward the Western world over drone strikes and, you know, losing innocent loved ones. I mean, if you provide any type of service that benefits or betters the life of these individuals, then they're more likely to easily get recruited to your organization or your group or your political party. I'm concerned about this. And, you know, there are experts from the Anti-Defamation League that say, don't worry about it, it's not that big of a deal. He doesn't have the resources to pull this off. But again, I think it's a bad idea to brush people off and pretend like, you know, they're not a real threat, especially given what happened with Trump.
Yeah, and to be fair to the person from the Anti-Defamation League, she's monitoring them and checking them,
yeah.
And she's not taking it too lightly. But I'm with you, Anna, that we got to be more careful, because I've heard way too many times from people in Washington, no, people love the status quo. It's just not true. So finally, and speaking of being careful, look at what he did. They changed their words to make it more mainstream. And again, this is really interesting and telling, because a candidate that they backed ran with the slogan "Make America White Again," and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. Only got 2% of the vote. So they, even in a deeply red area of the country, that message of "Make America White Again" is not at all successful. So he changes to the things that Anna just told you, that he's advocating for the silent majority. That means white people. Richard Nixon used that exact same language. Richard Nixon, like this white nationalist, met white people. And so this guy's like, oh right, that's why Republicans say silent majority, because mm-hmm. it's a wink so that you don't feel racist when you vote for me, but you get that I'm actually only for white people. And then the other code word, those left behind by globalism. Saying I hate Jews is not working as well in the polls, because people feel a little uncomfortable with it. Say people left behind by globalism, which is the new word phrase that Steve Bannon came up with for anti-Semitism, mm-hmm. and people are like, oh yeah, yeah, no, I don't like those the Jews running Wall Street, etc. And which is so frustrating, because Wall Street is doing so many things wrong, but these guys are misdirecting the anger towards one particular ethnicity. Well, that's not the issue. I've gone over this literally with David Duke in an interview. I listed all the Irish yep. bankers in charge of Wall Street firms and Indian Americans, meaning South Asians, etc. Mm-hmm. Vikram Pandit is not Jewish. Okay, the real issue is that we have allowed private financing of elections, and the politicians serve private interests. That's the issue. But it's gotten so bad, people are now looking to white nationalists to end globalism and speak for the silent majority.
Yeah.
And when you change the language like that, it does work. That's why Nixon won, and that's why Trump won.
Yep. All right, one more story before we go to break. Since the election of Donald Trump, there has been an increased activity among ICE officials. One tactic that they have really ramped up is going to courthouses and waiting outside to essentially go after people that they believe are undocumented immigrants. Now, this has a number of negative implications, including messing with our justice system and making people feel unsafe or uncomfortable going to the courts when there's an issue. Now, there's also the issue of racial profiling, which was very evident in a story that recently broke featuring ICE officials who approached the wrong Latino man that they thought was an undocumented immigrant. Now, the video that we're about to show you was shot at the Washington County Courthouse in Oregon. It is a disturbing video, but it gives you a sense of what people, American citizens, are currently going through in this country. Take a look. Do you have a warrant? Do you know this person? Are you with ICE? Do you have a warrant for arrest? Do you have any identification? Do you have any identification that you can show them?
Excuse me, ma'am, please step back.
This picture right here.
Do you have any identification that you are showing them?
Bitch, please, that is not my husband.
Do you have?
You are not the only. You are not a part of the court.
Who are you?
You are not part of the court. We do not know you. Please back away from my husband. Please back away from our car before we call the cops. No, you don't need to show anything to this bitch.
We have 5 agents.
These random
we have three cars.
They're asking my husband for his identification. We have no idea who any of these people are. We literally just walked out of the courtroom and we're being approached right now. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
This is absolutely ridiculous. We don't know any of these people.
Get the fuck out of here.
Get the fuck out of here, you son of a bitch.
This woman asked my husband what his first and last name was, asked him for his ID, showed a mugshot to him, and told him that that was him. It was not even the same picture. Who the hell is she? And then we came out of the courtroom and she followed us.
Okay, so the man that they approached is Isidro Andrade Tafola, and he is a US citizen. He was not the person that they were looking for. They just approached a guy that they thought looked like the person they were looking for. He did refuse to give the agents his ID, but he did tell them his name. They then took the photo out of this man, showed it to him, and then just refused to believe him when he said, "That's not me, you have the wrong person." This is madness. And by the way, I didn't realize that ICE officials approach you in plain clothes. If that woman in jeans and a green hoodie approached me and my husband asking for identification, I wouldn't take her seriously. I'd be like, I don't know who you are. Pause, okay?
Yeah, so there's two different issues here. So the ACLU says this is a clear case of racial profiling. I think that depends on the context. So let me explain. If they thought that the guy with the mugshot that they're looking for was in court that day for some reason, then you could make an approach to a person who looks like him and say and figure out if it's him or not. If they're stalking this courthouse looking for Latinos that are coming out of it, then that's racial profiling and that's crazy. And they assured us, no, this is only for the bad hombres and etc. But when you go around asking random Latinos for their papers, no, that's Gestapo-like stuff. So I would just need more information to figure out which one is which here. And so, but ICE is not getting back to anybody, so we don't know that there was someone in that courthouse
right.
that matches that same exact description.
So what I am clear on is that regardless of your immigration status, even if you are in the country and you are undocumented, you are protected by the US Constitution. You have constitutional rights. That is not something that is my opinion. That is based on precedent set by numerous Supreme Court rulings, okay? So undocumented immigrants have constitutional rights. If you start harassing Latinos as they're walking out of courtrooms, think about what you do to the justice system and think about what you do to the rights of not just undocumented immigrants, but American citizens. You don't want to instill fear in people to the point where they feel uncomfortable going to a courthouse or feel uncomfortable reporting to the authorities if there has been a crime, if they've been the victim of a crime. There's been numerous cases, countless cases of undocumented women who were either abused, beaten up, raped, and they feel like they can't go to the cops because they worry that they're going to be the ones punished as a result of this. There are protections for those women, by the way. And so if there's now a number of stories making headlines featuring these ICE officials harassing people as they're coming out of courtrooms, that's a huge problem. I think that should be banned, okay?
That leads me to the second issue at hand, and this one's much clearer. And cops do this from time to time. I literally had this happen to me. It was a long time ago. But sometimes cops will be undercover. That's normal. And if you're infiltrating a gang or whatever, you're going to be undercover. We get that. But when you go to detain someone, you can't just assume that they'll assume you're a cop.
That's right.
How do we know you're a cop? And cops get really offended when you ask them for ID. That's what happened to me. And they did a false arrest on me, which they then had to withdraw. Okay. And it's not illegal to ask for your ID. In fact, it's the most legal thing I could do because otherwise people are going to get kidnapped when random people come and pretend to be police officers and take them off the streets. But they feel like in this case, and it's not cops, it's ICE, but that they're above the law. Well, that's the kind of lawlessness that's the trouble at hand. So if people have constitutional rights and American citizens and undocumented immigrants definitely do, according to the Supreme Court, well, then you should approach them in a legal way. So if you're looking for a guy, go up in your, or even if you're in undercover for whatever reason, and I don't know the particulars of that case or the guy they were looking for, but when you go up to the guy to detain him, you gotta show him a badge. You gotta, so that they know you're cops, because I don't know if you, first of all, even if he is guilty, that's the right way to do it, that's the legal way to do it. And second of all, you don't always get the right guy, so you might be scaring the hell out of an average citizen. And they don't know if they're about to get put into a van. And if it was the right guy, why are you guys undercover? Why can't you just be ICE and say, hey, I got the bad guy and I'm gonna put him and I'm gonna detain him. Like, it makes it look like it's go time and you're gonna throw him in the back of a van if it turns out you did get the right guy.
Right.
And that's not the right procedure either.
Right, I mean, I just think about yourself in that position where you're approached by those very people that approach this American citizen, okay? I think that the situation would probably even escalate if I were involved, because I'd be like, who's this random woman like bothering me? Like, who are you? You know, like, you're asking me for ID. I don't know who you are. And I'd get angry. And you know, the fact that they kind of kept things under control is pretty miraculous, because again, they refused to answer any questions and they kept insisting that this guy was someone that he wasn't.
By the way, if you missed it, the guy in the ice vest that showed up, he was the presumably the lead agent, and he said, that's not him, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's, look, if you're the law, you don't have to do things in this weird surreptitious way, and you don't have to like throw people in vans, or you don't have to run. If it's just a simple matter of identifying yourself, are you this person? Yes, then you're under arrest. No, then you're not. Sorry to detain you for a minute while we found out. People aren't going to freak out if you come up to him and go, hey, here's a guy who looks like you. Is that you? Oh, it's not you. Okay.
Yeah.
But when you go up to him like a rando, like, give me your ID. Yeah. And then you're like, come out of a freaking vehicle that was waiting for them. And they're like, what is going on?
Right. Exactly.
This is what we're worried about, that all of a sudden it appears like you're doing racial profiling of random people, and you've got this feeling of lawlessness at ICE, because they've done this in the past. We told you about somebody gave a political speech about being undocumented. ICE pulls up after the speech, grabs her, and then whisks her away. What do we have? Like, we're going to start putting hoods over people's heads? And this is not how.
Don't give them ideas.
I know, right? This is not how a legal society ruled by law should operate.
Exactly. All right, let's take one more break. Wait, do we have to take a break? We do, yes.
Yes.
Okay, let's take one more break. When we come back, the Lawrence O'Donnell piece that I.
Who's doing the hammering? What is going on here?
Okay. So good.
When we come back, we'll do it live. All right, back on the Young Turks. Members of the day are Anna Miller and Michael Morgan. Thank you, guys. And today in the post game, if you haven't heard that story of how I got arrested, this is a long time ago, over 20 years ago. I'll tell you guys in the postgame, okay? TYTnetwork.com/join. Now, a couple of quick comments. Kevin Knepp says, white nationalists, we're not terrorists. We just do terrorist things and use terrorist tactics. Zeiss Cube says, I don't understand how a white person can consider himself a nationalist when his ancestry requires immigration from Europe. Fair point. Mm-hmm. I think probably only the Native Americans get to be real nationalists. Mm-hmm. Gabby says, Republicans have used dog whistles to energize racists for decades. Donald Trump just swapped it for a bullhorn. Yep. And then the Mad Lib finally says, no ID, no uniform, no warrant, and you want to see my papers?
Exactly.
You have the right to go fuck yourself. Have a nice day.
Yeah.
And of course, if you do that, then stuff's going to escalate. And then God knows what happens to you. And then they're going to say, well, I thought I was under a threat.
Yeah, I know. It's just not the right way to do things. All right, let's have a little bit of fun.
Fun.
All right. Mediaite has published an 8-minute long video featuring MSNBC host Lawrence O'Donnell losing his patience with his crew. Now, this was leaked, and whoever leaked it is a bad actor. It's not cool, you shouldn't have done it. However, the video is awesome. And a lot of fun. And I debated whether or not we should talk about this. And ultimately, I came to the conclusion that we should. Because I mean,
I like that standard. If something is too fun, well, what are we going to do?
Okay, look, I know that some people might look at this as, oh, it's damaging his reputation. No, I don't think it's that big of a deal. And I'll let you judge for yourself. He did apologize for it via Twitter. I'll give you that apology in just a second. But first, let's get to the fun stuff, okay? We have a ton of clips. Let's go to the first one.
What's going on? Why am I losing this? Why don't I have sound? All right, it's back. Someone's pressing buttons and turning my sound off. Who's asking for a Labor Day rundown in my ear?
Okay, all right. Now, look, this is he's not on air, okay? But the cameras are always rolling. And when I was at MSNBC, I was cognizant of this. But you know, you
forget.
No, it's not even that you forget. It's just stuff's going on, right?
Yeah.
And so me, I'd get hungry because I'm running the whole day. I used to do the Young Turks 2 hours, MSNBC an hour. Like, so I'd be eating a banana off air. I was like, can't wait for these tapes to be released one day. I'm like, eating a banana, right? Anyway, so somebody has those tapes somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of feel bad for Lawrence here, and he's genuinely frustrated about things he probably should be frustrated. If you've never had an earpiece in your ear, it is super annoying. Now, of course, you get used to it. Anna's got one right now,
yeah.
And if somebody's constantly talking and you're trying to concentrate, it is grating. So that's my defense of him. And I'm with you, Anna. It's too amusing, and I feel bad. But like
yeah.
when he goes, you're like, oh no.
Oh, it's so good, but it gets better. Okay, so look. Understand that when you're doing a live show, and you do a live show with an establishment cable news outlet, like there's so much pressure for everything to be perfect and polished, and you have to be that perfect little robot, right? Just like let loose. I get it. There's something going on with your ear, right? There's some sort of technological issue. Just be honest with your audience and move on with your life. It's not the end of the world. But he's conditioned to like freak out as soon as there's a tech issue. So, all right, that's just the beginning. Let's take a look at the next one.
God damn it.
10 seconds.
Get.
5, 4.
Sorry, Lawrence. Sorry, but it is funny. Come on, when you okay. But that's to Anna's point, and that's why this actually is newsworthy. I mean, it's not just to pick on Lawrence, who's obviously having a bad day.
Because you had a bad day.
But because TV's so fake, that's why like you go like, and then the TV's on. All right, back on the program here. Right, which is exactly what O'Reilly did. Yeah, it's okay. You can come back on and be frustrated. At the top of this show, Anna told somebody to turn on the monitor here. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know what? The audience found out the monitor wasn't on. Everybody just bring it down. Be human for a second.
Yeah,
and in fact, even the anger makes you more human.
Yeah. So, okay. I know he loses it, but this didn't make me dislike him. It just showed his human side, and you never see the human side of people. And it just made me appreciate him as a human. Like, it's okay. Okay, we all have our meltdowns. It's not the end of the world. Let's take a look at the next one, though.
And tragedy, and into that tragedy today stepped the President of the United States.
23 seconds.
There's insanity in the control room tonight.
23 seconds. Okay, I'm gonna use that line from now on, and we gotta get that on the soundboard. There's insanity in the control room tonight.
Oh, his comments about the control room get better. Next one.
Someone in that control room is out of control.
I want that one on the soundboard too. And I'm gonna use it against you guys in the control room.
Oh man. Okay, so he's lost it. He's really upset. His earpiece still is not functioning properly, and someone tries to help him out. Here's his reaction.
Who had been missing since Sunday morning. You have insanity in my earpiece. Don't leave it there. It's not my earpiece, it's somebody talking on our lines. Fuck.
10 seconds.
Fuck, it's out of control, shit.
Do it on air, it'll be fun. Do it live, we'll do it live.
What does it mean to play us out? That wasn't him, that was Bill O'Reilly. Okay, all right, now there's an issue with construction happening in the building, and Cenk has experienced this, and he has also lost his patience. So it brought back memories for me, made me very nostalgic. Take a look.
Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer? Where is it?
I don't know. It's
Where's the hammer?
It's on a different
floor. Is it on the, go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering. Stop the hammering.
I think it's going
to I'll go down to the goddamn floor myself and stop it. Keep the goddamn commercial break going. Call fucking Phil Griffin. I don't care who the fuck you have to call. Stop the hammering. Empty out the goddamn control room and find out where this is going on. It's either there or there or out there somewhere.
It's either north or south or east or west of Tikrit. That's where the weapons of mass destruction, the hammer of mass destruction is. Okay, so you're right, Anna. Almost exactly what happened with me.
Yeah.
So again, Lawrence, we empathize in some ways, man. And so I know he's having a hard time now.
Yeah.
And yes, we're laughing and everybody is. It's okay. You'll laugh one day too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so now I didn't do it on air, but it was literally drilling in the room above our heads when we were on, I think it was Air America at the time, and we're all doing online video too. But I got on the phone with the landlord and I let it rip.
I've never heard Cenk lose his temper like that. And you guys have seen him lose his temper on the show, so you've heard him get loud, but that was, it was scary. Like it got it got real quiet in the office.
Okay, and I think, look, on this one, probably the reason it got leaked is because somebody didn't feel good about being yelled at.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I don't know if you know this, I have the tape. They're probably furiously trying to find who that is right now as we speak. And the issue there was that it would at least appear that he was punching down. And that's the no-no. Right?
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Because so when I was yelling at the landlord, I was punching up, right? I wasn't like randomly pick a person in the control room and be like, you some bitch, I'm coming for you. So, and to, again, over the top, like defense of Lawrence in a sense of that, like he's super frustrated and this thing's constantly bomb, 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 bomb in his ear. And nobody's making it stop. And he's like, for some, can I'm not making it up. There actually is hammering in my ear. Can someone make it stop? Mm-hmm. The Phil Griffin that he referred to is my old friend, Phil Griffin, who runs MSNBC.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe I should have that on the soundboard too. So somebody call fucking Phil Griffin.
All right. I want to skip ahead to the last video, video 15, because it just kind of summarizes all the things that went wrong. Take a look.
I don't know why I bother to say how to cut the slots when you don't do it. I just don't know why. So now I have to chase those stupid goddamn entrails that you allowed him to stick out there. Jesus Christ. Crazy fucking sound coming in my ear, this fucking stupid hammering. I told you why I wanted those fucking words cut. It just fucking sucks. It fucking sucks to be out here with this out of control shit. Any fucking thing can come into my ear at any moment. That's what I know. Anybody can get into my fucking ear at any time. Some woman talking about what we're doing after the show. Fucking guests' faces coming up in the middle of a fucking script.
Dude, like that's, I'm so happy we don't have teleprompters. Because you become a slave to that script. Right, you become so conditioned to read from a freaking teleprompter that like you forget how to be a human and just talk about the news like a human being. And by the way, like this is not his fault. That's just the model of television news. That's what they do. That's what you learn when you're in journalism school. You learn how to operate a fucking teleprompter as part of a journalism program, right? Like that is so old school, and it not only disconnects you from the topic that you're talking about, it disconnects you from the audience. Just be a human, it's okay. The script, all right, some woman's face is popping up in your script on the teleprompter. It's fine, you know the story, talk about the story.
Yeah, and so, okay, last couple of things here. First of all, when it's impossible not to laugh when he says that there's all these things coming in my ear.
Okay. Oh, come on.
Okay, it reminded me of the Star Trek where the bugs, the alien bugs go inside their ears and then take over their brains. Anyway, but it is a metaphor for overly produced television.
Yes.
Where there are all these different people speaking to you about what you should say, and it's so, you know, well, they think it's well put together, but it's actually overly produced.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't, look, all of this is like the fun and games, like I've thrown pens down before, whatever, okay? And you had a bad day, we've all had bad days. In some ways, again, it makes us relate to you in more humor, but that's not allowed on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And everything has to be perfect, but it's like manicured in a way that's so artificial that we're vomiting the fakeness, and people can't stand it anymore. In fact, when I talk to people on the street about why they watch us when they come up to me, they all say the same thing, real, genuine, and then one of them just said in New York, it made me realize, like in hindsight, how much they're acting on TV.
Right.
And so Lawrence, I know a little bit, and he's a really smart guy, and oftentimes fun guy, a really fun guy, right? And he's having a bad day there, but that's why I, and so it's, for me, it's not personal at all, I like him. But that's why I call most of the folks on TV news actors, not news anchors. Because somebody's messing with his script and it gets really frustrating. If he didn't have a script in the first place, that'd be a different scenario.
Right, and that's not to say that he couldn't be a news anchor. Like, I think that he does know the
subject. Oh, he knows a ton, he's super
smart. Yeah, he's a smart guy. So I just feel like, you know, look, I don't know what the repercussions would be if he decided, you know what, fuck the script. I'm just gonna do the news, okay? Without the script, because I know what I'm talking about. I don't know if there would be consequences
for that. No, I know. Oh, there are consequences. I was literally in that same seat. Mm-hmm. So this is really interesting. And we'll talk more about this in the postgame too, and give you the fuller story. TYTnetwork.com/join to get the postgame and become a member. Okay, but real quick. First of all, I remember when I was coming on right after Obama had given a live speech about the Egyptian revolution. And I said, look, guys, I'm going to keep it real with you on what Obama said. And immediately there was coming in my immediately there was a producer in my earpiece saying, don't keep it real. Because there's a lot of fingers.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I'll tell you the full story, like I said in the post.
Don't keep it real.
Yeah, literally, that was a literal thing that was said to me. And so why do they have prompters? One day I said, hey, look, man, I've been doing prompterless back then for 10 years. Well, let me go prompterless. They're like, no. I'm like, why? It wasn't that they wanted it perfectly produced. That was a huge part of the equation. But when you really peeled it back, it was because the management reads the scripts ahead of time.
Yeah, they want to control it.
And that's right. And so the reason they have a prompter is so that you don't say anything off message, like against an advertiser, against politicians that hasn't been pre-vetted. And that's the real problem of television.
Yeah. Real quick, Lawrence O'Donnell did apologize for this. He said, a better anchorman and a better person would have had a better reaction to technical difficulties. I'm sorry.
That's a great apology.
It is a great apology. I think it's a great apology had he like been this crazy tyrant. I think he went a little too far. Like, you're fine, dude. It's fine. You're going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
But it doesn't feel that way. I'm sure he's getting a ton of heat and everybody's making fun of him online. And so, yeah, it's bad. It feels really bad. Like I said, another thing I'll tell you in the postgame. One time, I got my sister in a lot of trouble, and I said, "One day we'll laugh about this." She said, "We will never laugh about this." And I think that's probably what Lawrence is feeling today.
Right, right.
But that's not true. One day you will laugh about it.
Yeah. All right. We got to take one more break. When we come back, Brett Ehrlich joins us. But you know what? Actually, before we go to break, I want to tell you guys a little bit more about the Streamies because it's important. Okay.
Go.
So. The Young Turks have been nominated for a Streamy. Show of the Year is the category that we've been nominated in. And the only way that we can win is if TYT Army supports us and shows us that you are too strong. Now, you don't have to vote for us if you don't want to, obviously. But if you have a Twitter account and want to support us, you can actually vote for us every single day up until the awards by tweeting the hashtag TYT4Streamies, TYTFOR Streamies. We are also nominated for a show on Pop Trigger called Murder with Friends. That is the show that is hosted by Grace Baldridge. You guys should definitely vote in favor of that as well if you choose to. And you know,
and for news show of the year as well. Mm-hmm. So look, I'm going to disagree with Anna a little bit here. Number one, you do have to vote for us. It's mandatory. They just passed a law. I don't know. I saw it in a tweet.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, there's not that much time between now and September 26th. In all seriousness, how cool would it be if we won Show of the Year? That's the thing that you should focus on. Hashtag TYT for Streamies. Because it would annoy our critics and our trolls so much if we were the number one show on the entire internet.
It's a liberal conspiracy.
Oh my God.
Oh, everyone's
what did
so
you
liberal.
See about election night? Ah.
Yeah, that's what would happen and it would be great.
You know what? I want to tape all of them as kind of like their election night moment if we win that election.
Yes.
Like we're declared the show of the year on the internet. They're going to be like, oh my God, brace for impact. Hashtag TYT for Streamies.
Yes, and by the way, retweets do count. So you can retweet someone that's supporting us. Again, use the hashtag TYT for Streamies to vote for us.
Let's go win and drive right-wingers crazy. All right.
All right.
We'll be right back.